Our sermon text is from Luke 23, which is a scene of Jesus on the cross. We're looking at this today because today is the last Sunday of the church year. That means next Sunday is the start of Advent, which marks the new year on the church calendar. And since the early 1900s, many churches have recognized the last Sunday of the church year as Christ the King Sunday. We've gone the entire church year following the ministry of Jesus, and we end the year by recognizing his current status as King of the universe. You can think of it as the conclusion to Jesus' ministry. The Son descended from heaven to become a man, and he is now ascended back to heaven as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That is what we are recognizing today. And next week, we'll go back to the beginning. We'll anticipate his coming. We'll celebrate his birth, and so on. Luke 23 is a passage that emphasizes Jesus' kingship. It's really what the passage is all about. And I believe Luke is painting two different pictures for us. The first picture is how the crucifixion looked to those without faith. And the second picture is how it looked to those with faith. Luke gives us two different visuals. Starting in verse 33. And when they had come to the place called Calvary, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Jesus was crucified at a place called Calvary, which is from the Latin word for skull. Crucifixion was one of the worst forms of punishment for criminals practiced by the Romans. This meant that Jesus was being treated as a criminal, and two criminals were there with him, one on the right, one on the left. People mocked Jesus because of this. If you were a bystander there without eyes of faith, you would have thought that Jesus was an evildoer. He certainly did not look like a king as he claimed to be. The natural thought, looking by sight, would be that he was a criminal, not a king. In verse 35, the Jewish rulers said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is the Christ, the chosen of God." These terms are significant. Christ in Greek, or Messiah in Hebrew, means the anointed one. And the word chosen in Greek is the same word for elect. So they were saying, if you are the anointed one, the Messiah, if you are the elect one, save yourself. And these terms have kingly connotations. The anointed of God and the elect one are terms used for the promised king, the son of David, who would reign on David's throne. The rulers were using these terms against Jesus. They were saying, "You're no king. You're not the anointed or chosen one. If you were, you would save yourself." And the Roman soldiers said the same thing. "If you are the king of the Jews, save yourself." Surely a king would not be in this position. The soldiers also divided or tore Jesus' garments, and they offered him sour wine to drink. All of this to ridicule him. This king had no glorious apparel, and he didn't have fine wine. Things that you would expect a king to have. Verse 38. And an inscription also was written over him in letters of Greek, Latin, and Hebrew. "This is the King of the Jews." This inscription was meant to be satire. Remember, they were mocking him. They didn't really believe that he was the king. "But okay, Jesus, you say you're a king? Well, here you go. We'll let you wear that title while you're being crucified. Enjoy it while it lasts. You're not really a king. You're really a failure. You're no different than these two criminals." Then we find out that one of the criminals joined in. One of the criminals blasphemed him, saying, "If you are the Christ, save yourself and us. The criminal said the same thing as the rulers and soldiers, but with an addition. He said, save yourself and us. He was more than willing to benefit from Jesus' power. This was a selfish request more than anything. The point here with this first picture is that the rulers, the soldiers, and the first criminal saw Jesus' crucifixion as incompatible with kingship. They saw it as incompatible. This is not what happens to a king. They saw no kingdom. They saw no throne. Jesus was about to die. He was disproven in their eyes, exposed as a loser and a fraud. And that's seeing things with natural eyes. But the second picture is a picture from eyes of faith. And of all people, it comes from the second criminal. In verse 40, the second criminal spoke up, rebuking the other. He said, do you not even fear God, seeing that you are under the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds, but this man has done nothing wrong. The second criminal rebuked the first criminal. He declared that Jesus was innocent. He said, we deserve this death. Jesus doesn't. With natural eyes, it looked like Jesus was a criminal, but he actually wasn't. What looked to be the case was not the case. And that's not all the criminal had to say. He turned to Jesus in verse 42, saying, Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom. This is the big twist of the passage. We've seen that the rulers and the soldiers and the first criminal viewed Jesus' crucifixion as incompatible with kingship. But the second criminal did not see it that way. He did not view it as incompatible. And by the way, this dialogue between the criminals is only recorded in Luke. These details are unique to Luke's gospel. Jesus was hanging on a cross to die, and yet the criminal said, remember me in your kingdom. That statement implies that the crucified Jesus has a kingdom. It implied that the crucified Jesus was a king. The second criminal knew that the cross was not incompatible with kingship. It did not disprove Jesus' kingship. It was a part of his kingship. The second criminal got it. He had eyes of faith. And from that perspective, we see everything else in the passage more clearly. Everything the rulers and the soldiers did to mock Jesus actually glorified Jesus. How's that for divine irony? They didn't know they were doing it, but they were. When they said things like, are you not the Christ? They were correct. And they were saying these things out loud, publicly, where everyone could hear. Yes, he is the Messiah. Yes, he is the elect one. And yes, he will be saved from the crucifixion. But not in the way that they would have imagined. He would be saved from it after going through it. He would be saved from the penalty of crucifixion when he rises from the dead on the third day. When they put an inscription above him that said, the King of the Jews, they were correct. That sign was a true statement, and that sign served as his banner for all to see in the three primary languages of that day: Hebrew, Greek, and Latin. This king wasn't just the King of the Jews. He is a multicultural, multinational king. He is the King of all nations, all tribes, all peoples, all tongues. When the soldiers gave him sour wine, they were intending to be cruel. But wine in the Bible is a kingly drink. Wine is the drink of kings when they rest after a long day's work or being victorious in battle. And here we have Jesus being offered wine on the cross. It might have been sour, but it was still wine. Jesus was offered a drink of celebration, a drink of victory. That was more significant than the soldiers realized. When they divided his garments, they thought they were humiliating Jesus. Clothing is for glory and beauty, and he was stripped of that glory. They thought he would never have glory again, but they got it all wrong. The crown of thorns that Jesus wore was his glory. The stripes on his back and the holes in his hands were his glory. They stripped him of material glory, but he was putting on a better glory. When they put two criminals on Jesus' right and his left, they were placing Jesus in the position of a king with his trusted advisors on either side of him. Having someone on your left and your right is a kingly thing. If you'll remember, the apostles, James and John, they said, "In the kingdom, let us sit at your right hand and left hand." They wanted this close position to Jesus. They wanted to be his most trusted counselors. But what did Jesus say? He said, "No, that's not for you. That's been prepared for other people." And I believe he was talking about the two criminals. When they lifted Jesus up on a cross at a place called the Skull, no less, their reason was to humiliate him and kill him. But they actually exalted him. They raised him up for all to see. He was lifted high above his enemies. You might say that the cross was a type of throne for Jesus before he ascended to the throne in heaven. And what about the skull? Why was the mountain called Calvary or the skull? Well, there's some debate on this. Some think the mountain must have looked like a skull in its shape. Some think it's where David buried the skull of Goliath. We don't really know for sure, archaeologically speaking. And that's okay, because we can know symbolically. Back in Genesis 3, when the first prophecy was given of the seed of the woman who would rescue humanity from sin, it said he would crush the head of the serpent. The serpent would bruise his heel, but he would crush the serpent's head. And here we have Jesus lifted up on a cross with his feet above a place called the skull. Jesus' feet was above the skull. He was bruised all right, but the skull was below him. The skull was under his feet. We don't need to know why this place was called the skull to see its importance. There's a reason Luke gave us this detail. Jesus' enemies did not realize any of this, but taking him to the skull to be lifted up on a cross visually demonstrated his victory over the serpent. He is the king. He is the seed of the woman, the Messiah, and it was his death that was the fatal blow to Satan. That is the picture we need to see when we see Jesus on the cross. Not the picture of him being a criminal. The picture of him being the king. And we have to see it with eyes of faith. Jesus spoke as a king while on the cross. He still spoke with authority, even in this position. That's what you would want from a king, right? In spite of all the torture and ridicule, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do." Here we see Jesus putting into practice his own teaching to love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, bless those who curse you, and pray for those who abuse you. Jesus was hated and cursed and abused by his enemies, and yet He prayed for them. He prayed for them. He prayed for them to be forgiven, which was a prayer for them to come to faith and repent. On the cross, Jesus did not lose his cool. Jesus did not lash out at his enemies. He was the king. He was in charge, not them. He had the position of authority. It was the rulers, soldiers, and first criminal who were frenzied and foolish. What did Jesus say about them? They do not know what they are doing. What else did Jesus say? When the criminal said, "Remember me in your kingdom," Jesus said, "Assuredly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." By today in paradise, Jesus was not talking about their tombs. Okay? He was talking about where their spirits would go after death, which at that time was the good side of Hades, Abraham's bosom. That's where all the Old Covenant saints went when they died. We recently learned about that place in Luke 16. The second criminal affirmed Jesus' kingship, and he cried out for mercy. "Remember me. Remember me." That's a good prayer for you to pray also. The criminal wanted to be close to Jesus. He wanted to be a servant in the kingdom, and Jesus affirmed that he would be. Jesus was dying on the cross, yet he still showed mercy, and he could say with confidence where he and the criminal were going. None of this was a surprise to Jesus. Jesus was in control. All of this was in his plan. He spoke with authority, even when he was in agony. The cross was not the death scene of a failure. It wasn't the death scene of a fraud. A fraud would have caved a long time ago. Yes, Jesus was in pain, but he stayed firm. He stayed consistent. He was the one exalted and glorified, and he was the one calling the shots. This was the death scene of a king, the king of the Jews and the king of all humanity. So the question for you today is, how will you respond to the cross? Will you respond like the rulers, soldiers, and first criminal? Or will you respond like the second criminal? And that's not a decision that you make once in your life and forget about it. That's a decision that you make every day of your life. It is an everyday commitment. You might wonder why I'm evangelizing you since we're all Christians here. But it's because we need to hear this. We have to make this decision every day to follow Jesus or to not follow him. It is a daily commitment, a daily decision. How do you respond? Which picture do you see? Do you see Jesus as a criminal, worthy of ridicule? Or do you see him as the king, worthy of honor and submission? You can't just say he's king either. This has to do with your life, your actions, your obedience to him. You could say Jesus is king all day long, but when you forsake him, when you disobey him, you are not treating him as king. You have to have the verbal confession and the life of obedience. That is what the king desires from you. But when you do disobey, there's good news. The good news is that he is merciful. He is ready to forgive, just like he was ready to forgive his oppressors. When you cry out to him, he will remember you, just like he remembered the criminal. Jesus is king is the gospel message. And it's the message that we must take into our hearts and minds, into our homes and jobs and schools and in all of our relationships, everywhere and to everyone. With eyes of faith, look at the right picture of the cross. See Jesus for the king that he is and help others see the right picture. Sadly, there are people today who continue the ways of the rulers and the soldiers. They mock the cross. They mock Jesus. They say he's no king. And they put rival kings in his place. We have people today like the first criminal. People who try to use Jesus for their own selfish ambitions. Not having a genuine love for him, but using him as a means to benefit themselves. Neither of those positions are correct. You must stay firm and stay consistent under pressure, just as Jesus did, and proclaim the truth. You must be like the second criminal. He's a model for you. Not as a criminal, of course, but as a man of faith. He spoke up and he confronted the mockers. And the Lord will give you the strength to do the same. Today is Christ the King Sunday, but Christ is King every day. Look to him in faith and point others in his direction as well.